Employers continue to add jobs, but the improvement is super slow.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. It's the Morning Open. I'm Steve Chiatakis in for Bill Radke, who's back next week. The Labor Department reports the number of people claiming jobless benefits fell for the fourth straight week, yet people keeping their benefits going actually rose by a small number. Analysis on that coming up. First, where's Wall Street? Markets are down right now, anywhere from 0.5% to a full percent in trading today. The Dow is off about 12 points at 10,884. European markets are mostly higher at the moment. Major Asian markets had solid gains today. Diane Swonk is chief economist at Mesirow Financial. She's with us live from Washington this morning. Hi, Diane.
Good morning.
Let's talk about unemployment benefits. Claims are down, yet the number of people staying on unemployment is up. Why the disparity there?
What we're seeing is the labor market heal, but heal slowly, and the jobs we're generating, we slowed down firing, but the jobs that we're hiring for are not moving up fast enough to accommodate those people who have particularly been unemployed for a very long time. We're seeing long-term unemployment remain very, very high.
So improvement is just glacial.
It is. Glacial is probably the right word. Yeah. We had a little bit of hope in the month of April, but the bottom line is when you were losing almost a million jobs a month, if you gained 200,000 to 300,000, it's just not enough to accommodate or replace those jobs we lost.
Quickly, Diane, more news out today. Prosecutors looking into bank actions leading up to the financial crisis. Is this the punishment stage, if you will, of the recovery?
Well, certainly as political theater leading into the elections and looking for a scapegoat, the real issue is we're not looking at the core problems that led to the crisis, and that is gross income inequalities, rising income inequalities, and a lack of education for people to be able to be employed in the kinds of jobs we're generating. In fact, relating back to the last issue, some 3 million jobs went unfilled last year because the employers didn't have workers who had enough skills to fill those jobs.
Diane Swonk in Washington. Diane, thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Thursday, May 13th, 2010, at marketplace.org. Investors had pleaded with the Spanish government to make some really bold cuts early on. Then it could avoid the protests and the debt crisis that Greece suffered through. Spain also hopes it can avoid asking other European countries for help from the $1 trillion rescue plan unveiled this week. Marketplace's Europe correspondent Stephen Beard is with us from London to talk about the latest in the European financial crisis and how it's affecting the United States. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So what has happened in Spain?
The Spanish government has ordered a 5% cut in pay for public sector workers this year, a pay freeze next year, pension increases will be shelved, and a lot of infrastructure projects like road building, for example, are going to be put on hold.
And expound on why they're doing this right now, Stephen.
Well, this follows the $1 trillion EU IMF bailout package unveiled at the weekend. Spain has sort of rather dragged its feet over the debt issue. It's now under intense pressure from the European Commission in Brussels to get its public finances in order. And such is the international worry about a sovereign debt default in Europe, the Spaniards have even come under pressure from the US. The Spanish Prime Minister got a phone call from President Obama urging him to take drastic action. Here's Graham Mather of the European Policy Forum.
It's a good idea for President Obama to pick up the phone, whether it's the Spanish government with its deficit, whether it was Angela Merkel in Germany not moving fast enough over Greece. I think it helps if our American colleagues get involved.
Now, surely, Stephen, there must be some resentment. I mean, is there any resentment by the interference from abroad?
Well, oddly enough, there's more concern about pressure from within Europe, from the European Commission. Yesterday, the Commission said that it's taking closer control over the national budgets of the member states. This has raised the specter of political union, a United States of Europe, and this really does cause alarm in many European capitals. Yesterday, the Spanish opposition leader said the country was being dictated to by the Commission. There was a danger that Spain was becoming an EU protectorate.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard reporting from London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Nissan said today it's gotten more orders for its new electric car, the Leaf, than it has the capacity to make. The new zero-emission subcompact goes on sale in December. The automaker plans to boost production to meet demand. Today, Ford Motor holds its annual meeting in Delaware. It's been a relatively good year for Ford, with four straight profitable quarters and a rising stock price, and all without government help. So what's Ford's secret? Jill Barshay reports.
Back in 2006, when Alan Mulally became CEO of the company, he had a choice. He could stick with Ford's traditional approach to the U.S. market or change things up. Dave Sedgwick is an automotive media consultant. He says Ford was enchanted with the success it had in Europe with a line of hip, sprightly models.
They were going to come up with an all-American look, whatever that means. And finally, they said, no, screw it. Let's go with the European look.
Sedgwick says the compact and fuel-efficient Fusions and Focuses are a hit over here. Americans are even trading in their Japanese cars for them.
Yes, they have good products now, and they're selling well.
That's Martin Zimmerman. He's a former Ford executive at University of Michigan's Business School.
Well, the question is, you've obviously made great progress. What are you doing to keep that rate of progress going?
Zimmerman says Ford's big problem is its $23 billion debt load. He says the company needs a pipeline of trendy cars that will sell so that Ford can keep making its payments. I'm Jill Barshay for Marketplace.
The largest denomination bill printed in the United States is $100. You'd need six of those, plus a 20, a 10, and some change to equal how much a 500 euro note is worth. That's the biggest bill printed in Europe. And even though the euro is not the official currency of the UK, some stores there accept it. Now, because of organized crime, it'll be even harder to find. For Marketplace, the BBC's Rebecca Singer follows the money.
Criminals love big bills. How else are they going to cram $1 million into a briefcase? Jeffrey Robinson writes about global money laundering.
If I were a drug trafficker and I had a magic wand, I would wish for a 500 euro note, because what that does is immediately reduce the bulk of dirty money. It makes it easier to transport.
Not only is the 500 euro bill easier to carry, it travels further because it's accepted across Europe. And even though the UK uses the British pound, police in London have been finding vast quantities of the 500 euro note on drug raids. Ian Cruxton's from the Serious Organised Crime Agency. He says taking the note out of circulation will make life more difficult for the criminal gangs.
And actually, we suspect that this will open up a significant air gap and cause a real problem for criminals and actually starve them of the supply of one of their vital commodities.
Don't worry if you're a tourist. You can still bring a 500 euro note into the UK without raising too many suspicions. You just won't be able to buy one there. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
Congressional Oversight Panels released its latest report of the Troubled Asset Relief Program. It says Wall Street banks cut back on lending to small business by 9% since the bailout. The $700 billion in government help was initiated in part to open up lending. Harvard Law Professor Elizabeth Warren is chair of the Congressional Oversight Committee. She's with us now from Washington. Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
Is there something specific that banks don't like, or is there a reason you think they're reluctant to loan to small businesses?
Part of the problem is that it's more expensive to loan to small businesses in the sense that you can't do it just straight on the numbers. You know, let's look at a credit score. You actually have to look at a business plan to do that. And that means large banks have gotten out of that business to a significant degree and left it to intermediate size and small banks. Now, it's good for intermediate size and small banks to have some business there, but on the other hand, they're the ones who are also being hit by other aspects of the recession. You know, they're going to have to be dealing with the serious commercial real estate losses, and that means they may not be in a position to lend to small businesses.
So, Professor, if small businesses generate, what, two of three jobs in this economy, doesn't this fly in the face of the necessity of bailing out the banks in the first place?
Well, you know, that's really the irony here, isn't it? Remember, in the fall of 2008, Secretary Paulson went to Congress and the American people and said, we need this $700 billion bailout. because if we put the money into the banks, that's how it will make it on into the real economy. And the evidence shows that simply didn't happen. We put the money into big Wall Street banks, and that's where it stayed.
Professor Elizabeth Warren, chair of the Congressional Oversight Panel. Professor, thanks.
Thank you.
Another study out today says lending in minority communities fell at a much bigger clip during the financial crisis than in predominantly white areas. A group of seven nonprofit research organizations looked at minority lending in seven cities, places such as New York, L.A., and Chicago. Alexis Evenishu is with the Neighborhood Economic Development Advocacy Project in New York. Alexis, good morning.
Good morning.
So, all right, the real estate boom happens late 90s into the 2000s, and everybody's getting more loans. What kind of loans were being handled in communities of color?
Those loans were largely predatory, abusive, subprime loans that were made without regard for whether or not people could afford them and stay in their homes sustainably for the long term.
And then things dried up, and then what happened?
Banks really reduced their prime mortgage lending, and prime mortgages are, you know, your conventional everyday mortgage loans that you or I would like to get when we buy a house. It went down about 28% in white communities, and that's really, it sounds bad, but when you compare it to communities of color where prime lending, again, that's conventional mortgages, decreased by more than 60%, it's just a really shocking discrepancy.
And how do we get these numbers back up, and even with more reputable loans?
We really have to call on the banks to reinvest in communities where they had historically opened the door for the subprime lenders to come in and make abusive loans because these communities were so starved for credit. And also, they really need to think about how to do underwriting when people's credit has been ruined as a result of years of predatory lending.
Alexis Evenishu is a program associate with the Neighborhood Economic Development Advocacy Project, NEDAP, over in New York. Alexis, thanks.
Thank you.
And finally, there's a move on Facebook to get comedian Carol Burnett to host Saturday Night Live. 67,000 have signed up. If that sounds familiar, it's because actress Betty White got on the show the same way. There's a page for Carol Channing, even Liza Minnelli. And given that SNL's ratings shot up with Betty White hosting, there really might be something to this elderly comedian cyber push. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.